Earlier, during World War I, she outfitted an American Army hospital ship with equal modesty. At age 27, when Marjorie inherited her father's fortune, she already understood that great wealth could be as much a curse as a blessing. Let's not make too much about my sponsorship, because that has a tendency to drive money away, she once warned a publicist for the National Symphony Orchestra. It was no secret that Marjorie was one of the wealthiest women in the world. While her blue eyes blazed angrily when reporters confronted her with the richest woman label, Marjorie hardly lived in a modest manner. The castles of conspicuous consumption she built in Palm Beach, Washington, and New York were famous for their opulence and fairy tale luxury, legendary in their creature comforts and attention to the details of daily life. Perfection was the order of the day. The position of table place settings was measured with a ruler to assure uniformity. Outside, every lawn had to be weed-free, every tree and flower a prized specimen. Inevitably, the mansions Marjorie built, and her lifestyle within them, attracted the attention and awe of the press. To be Marjorie Meriwether Post was to be the best and to do the best for others, but that conviction was never spoken aloud. Instead, it was expressed through the philanthropist's perfectionistic zeal, her persistent efforts to create a flawless and flower-filled world where all the ills of humanity, want, evil, sickness, and death, could be at least temporarily forgotten. With that sense of personal mission, Marjorie played fairy godmother, queen, empress to the world. Those who were guests at Marjorie's homes witnessed that perfectionism for themselves. They approached Mar-a-Lago through thick steel gates and a majestic bank of bowing coconut palms leading to a porte-cochere and elegant entranceway. Then, passing beneath a beamed hand-painted Spanish ceiling, past coats of arms, Dresden vases, and Roman busts, they walked through carved double doors into a visual splendor so rich that it took hours to absorb. Money, millions of dollars of it, had been spent creating the estate. Built at the height of the Roaring Twenties by the heiress and her second husband, E.F. Hutton, the palace on 17 acres between Lake Worth and the Atlantic had been the inspiration of Florence Ziegfeld's set designer, Joseph Urban. Marjorie had furnished it with the same gaily plumed abandon as a Ziegfeld Follies stage set, filling it with furniture, tapestries, and paintings from decaying ducal palaces and stone carvings reminiscent of ancient Greece and Egypt. The parties held at Mar-a-Lago were equally fabulous. Guest lists often exceeded 200 and included some of America's most celebrated tycoons, moguls, and movie stars, as well as European aristocrats. At the hour indicated on Marjorie's engraved invitations, her guests appeared in Mar-a-Lago's shimmering drawing rooms or upon the crescent-shaped patio beneath the mansion's artificial blue moon. The men arrived in black or white ties, tuxedos, and pince-nez, and the women were draped in flowing gowns and trains, aglitter with gems, and trailed by feather boas. To entertain her guests, Marjorie once imported a three-act comedy produced by her friend, the Broadway showman Charles Dillingham. Another time, she brought the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus to her Florida estate. On innumerable occasions, her friends, Florence Ziegfeld and Billy Burke, provided costumes and set designs for amateur night benefits. For the more ordinary costume balls of the 20s, Marjorie's guests arrived in hand-sewn, beaded, or jeweled costumes, representing the most glorious cultures of the past: 18th-century France, Arabia, the Orient, and the Italy of the Renaissance. Royalty, in the flesh as well as the spirit, always fascinated her. Among Marjorie's friends were kings and queens, princes and dukes, lords and ladies. In imitation of the royal courts of Europe, Marjorie's parties were flawlessly elegant, attended by teams of liveried footmen, chauffeurs, and maids. Her dinner table, whether for groups of 50, 100, or 200, glistened with antique china,